You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Hi, good morning. My name is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. I'm joined with my co-host, Jim Dwyer. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. I don't know what happened in the spring, but at least the White Sox are still in first place, and they still have the best record in all of baseball.
Yeah, I know, exactly. You're very cheery this morning.
Oh, yeah.
On this rather overcast.
I just wish it was about 20 degrees warmer, but then.
I'll take 40. Jim, today we're going to talk about what we were hoping to talk about the last month or two, I think, right? Which is the conclusion of the Illinois General Assembly's legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about, for the next 45 minutes or so, some of the issues that the Catholic Conference has faced at the state level, dealing with state public policy issues in Springfield. And in a couple minutes, we'll be joined with one of the associate directors at the Catholic Conference, Ms. Mary Lou Garvaccio. We'll talk about some of the areas pertaining to maybe more of the social services, healthcare, some of the life issues as well the conference dealt with. Before we delve into that, we should probably let some listeners know two things. First of all, if you have any questions or comments or concerns about some of the topics we're going to talk about this morning, the number is area code 312-751-1979, and we're taking calls and comments about just about any topic this morning. But Jim, before we get into some of the specific issues, we should probably talk about, just mention briefly, we were talking previously about the marriage initiative, and there was an announcement made, I think it was last Monday, right, May 8th, that some petitions had been filed in Springfield. I think 345,000 signatures were filed at the Board of Elections, which would exceed the number minimum qualified, the 283,000 needed to state, put on the November ballot, that the question of marriage between one man and one woman being on the Illinois ballot in November. Now there'll be a process, I'm sure, where some of those signatures will be challenged, and so perhaps if they're certified, that question will get on November ballot. And I know that some of the parishes out there and many Catholics participated in that effort to get that on the ballot.
Yeah, Bob, and I've often wondered what happens when, if some of those challenges are upheld, do people get a chance to file more petitions or what?
That's it. The deadline was May 8th, uh-huh. And whatever you have at that point in time, you have. And if after a screening process, they'll go through the Board of Elections, will take a sample, and they'll test certain percentages of them. And if they're valid, they'll continue on. And then anybody has the right to challenge. They can challenge individual signatures if they want.
Okay, but if it gets on the ballot, aren't we talking about a non-binding referendum?
Because right.
We don't have binding referendums in this state, do we?
Not the way through a citizen's initiative, correct. So mm-hmm. If they gather the required number of signatures and it goes on the ballot, like you said, it's a non-binding advisory referendum that will be voted on statewide in November. And then at that point in time, I would imagine there'll be a political question into state leaders in Springfield as to what they want to do with that, if anything. There's no obligation for them to act on that initiative at all, even if it passes. But, you know, most people seem to think it does send a signal, and perhaps some leaders in Springfield may want to act, you know, on that, being that there were a wide number of signatures collected, and if it does pass by an over 50% majority, that some policymakers may want to take that and do something with it. Who knows what they'll wind up doing.
And Bob, I think one of the big misconceptions of this is maybe in some quarters there were some people who were pushing it to oppose somebody, but for the most part, this was not aimed at opposing any specific group or groups of people. It's just to reinforce what marriage has always traditionally been in our society.
Exactly, Jim. That was what the conference put out in a one- or two-page letter that went out to all the pastors and all the Catholic churches throughout the entire state. I think we put it out back in either November or October of last year, and it was simply stating the church's position that marriage should be defined as being between one man and one woman, and then if parishes wanted to take the initiative and collect signatures to help reinforce that they were welcome to do so. And so some you saw some pastors and some communities use it as kind of a teaching moment on Catholic social teaching and what the church teaches about that. And then others, you know, took different sort of approaches to getting involved with that initiative. But I think like any initiative such as that, it takes a lot of volunteer time and effort to organize and coordinate all those signatures. And like I said, I know that some people participated in that and others did not. But to get 345,000 signatures throughout the entire state, you know, that's pretty impressive. I don't care what sort of question you're trying to circulate. And they have to be valid signatures. And in Illinois, the way our system is set up, it's not easy to collect them. They have to be notarized. They have to be collected in a certain jurisdiction. So it's not like you can just circulate a piece of paper around. There does have to be a little screening done in order to have them certified by the Board of Elections.
So what's the time frame on this? When would we know whether or not this will be
good,
on the ballot?
That's a good question. We don't know for sure. I don't think there's any specific deadline in statute or anything like that. A lot of it is up to the workload at the Board of Elections on when they can do this, when they can get them back out to the local counties for them to help look at some of the screening and validate the signatures. I would imagine you'll see something probably midsummer, because the ballots have to be printed and then throughout the entire state. So they have to know fairly early so they can get the ballots out to the local counties if it's going to be on this or not. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you'll see some groups challenge some of those signatures.
And if it makes it on the ballot, I think that'll initiate a lot of campaigning pro and con. Because
yes.
Even though this is an off-year election year, we still have the gubernatorial race.
Yes.
And that's part of the reason why they scheduled it. The gubernatorial races to occur
right.
In the off-year election, so people can have a greater incentive to vote. And we're going to have, I would imagine, a fairly close race, depending on whether one or two other people jump into it between now and November. But even if they don't, we're going to probably have a pretty close race, and it's going to be an interesting situation come November, and there'll probably be a lot of people voting. So this would give whatever the result is even more power.
It does. And I was reminded this morning's paper, I think morning Chicago Tribune, has a quote by the First Lady Laura Bush about marriage initiatives and politicizing them, and her advice is to not politicize it. But clearly there's a political dimension to this issue. And who it attracts and who it deters from voting is also sort of a subtext in this whole issue of putting this on the ballot in Illinois. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that issue gets used and how it gets spun and how it gets perceived by different candidates running for different offices, not only at the gubernatorial level, but also at the local state level, because a lot of these state districts are very, very small areas geographically. And depending on where you reside in Illinois, it could perhaps be used to gather support for your particular campaign or your candidacy or opposition to it. So I think you're going to see this cut in a lot of different dimensions if it makes it on the ballot. That's still an open question.
I mean, there's some thought that Illinois has really become a rather liberal state. It's voted Democratic in the presidential elections for, the last 3, 4, 5 elections.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there still is a considerable conservative group outside of the main cities that tend to vote very conservatively on social issues. And actually, a lot of liberals don't necessarily support gay marriage and other alternative marriage lifestyles. So it's going to be interesting to see how this turns out in the long run, because this cuts across all lines, conservative, liberal,
exactly.
Libertarian,
right.
Et cetera.
Right. And for some people, this motivates them to get out to vote. And perhaps if the two leading parties, candidates, are the only party or the only candidates on the ballot, there might not be an incentive to vote. But if this makes it on the ballot, perhaps that does give some others an incentive to vote. And you could see that happening in November. And also we've read, you know, lately that there could be a third-party candidate. And also that might add a different dimension to this in terms of if that gets on the ballot or not. So there's a lot of things at play here, but it was some information that we didn't have in our last show back in April. And so that development has been going on. We'll be watching that and monitoring that closely.
Well, I think one thing for sure, if this gets on the ballot, you're going to have all kind of special interest groups marshaling support for one side or the other.
Absolutely.
And when I say special interest groups, in a sense, somebody once said in politics, whether we know it or not, we're all a member of one of those special interest
exactly.
groups in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So it's really going to, even though most people say, well, how does that affect my life? In some way, shape, or form, it's probably going to.
It will. And it'll be part of the dialogue and part of the conversation. And we will weigh in on it at some level, depending on what the particular question is, which remains to be seen. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined with one of the associate directors at the Catholic Conference of Illinois, Mary Lou Garbaccio, and we're going to talk about some of the issues that we were dealing with in the past legislative session, their outcome, good results, bad results, and anywhere in between. So we'll be back after this message. Once again, the phone number is area code 312-751-1979, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Youth 2000 is coming to Chicago. Popular across the country, the Youth 2000 Retreat inspires and prepares young people to live and give witness to the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. The charism of Youth 2000 is to lead young people through prayer and instruction before the Blessed Sacrament to a personal encounter with Jesus Christ. Youth and young adults ages 13 to 30 are invited. Youth 2000 will be held at St. Benedict's Church on Chicago's Northwest Side from Friday evening, June 9th, until Sunday afternoon, June 11th. For more information or to request a registration packet, please call 773-588-6484 or email youthretreat@stbenedict.com. That's 773-588-6484 or email youthretreat@stbenedict.com. We hope to see you at what promises to be an inspirational weekend retreat.
Hello, this is Bob Gilligan, and I'm back with Jim Dwyer. We're talking about some of the issues that the Catholic Conference, the public policy arm for the state's the six diocesan bishops in the state of Illinois, some of the issues that we were dealing with on the public policy level in Springfield. And on the line with us right now, I believe we have Miss Mary Lou Garbaccio. Mary Lou, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mary Lou, we were talking about the break about some of the non-legislative issues, I suppose, that we were talking about the marriage initiative and, mm-hmm. and some of the involvement that we had in that with the parishes. But I think we want to make a transition right now and talk about some of the legislative issues that we were dealing with. And I suppose one of the marquee accomplishments for us this year was for the first time, I think it was what, in 6 years
yes.
or something like that, the agencies that deal with social services finally received a slight increase from the state of Illinois. And I think that was through sort of a quasi-legislative budget initiative that we helped engineer getting money for the Catholic Charities programs. I know Father Mike and everybody was very involved with that effort. And some of the efforts that you had with the other six dioceses as well, some of the other six diocesan directors.
Yes, it was a major accomplishment for us this year. As you said, it was about 6 years since the last increase was provided, and it's a 3% increase that will go to foster parents, child welfare services, and youth services for fiscal year 2007. And we did a lot of work on that this year to help us be successful. Before the legislative session, we had the charities board members from all the different dioceses visit the legislators in their districts to talk about this issue to kind of get us on the ground running before session started. And then we did introduce a bill that contained the increase and set out the different programs that would receive an increase, and that was House Bill 4543 that was introduced by Representative Joe Lyons in the Chicago area. And during the session, our board members from Catholic Charities and from other provider groups visited legislators throughout the session talking about this issue. And I think their visits with legislators and making this a priority among them helps us be successful in getting this in the budget this year.
You know, that's a good point about contacting members of your particular legislator, because I think one of the things that really helped this year, perhaps more so than past years, and this goes for just about everything, every agenda item that we have in Springfield, is to the degree that people can meet with their local state representatives, their state senators, or their state representatives, really helps any advocacy effort. And if you talk to a lot of the state reps, they'll tell you that, I mean, if they get 5-10 phone calls about an issue, that can be a lot. And if, for example, in what the example you were giving with Catholic Charities and some of the board members actually taking the time out of their jobs or their private lives and meeting with legislators and saying, hey, look, you know, this is a concern in our community. We can't raise the money to do the services that we're required to do. And help us out here providing what you're supposed to be doing, which is really the state's ultimate responsibility, really does goes a long way towards achieving success in the General Assembly. And I think not only in Chicago, but the other six dioceses as well did a real good job of that grassroots advocacy.
Yes, I agree. I think it was statewide. We had all our Catholic Charities agencies go in and visit the legislators. So I think the effect was seen throughout the state in terms of visiting legislators. And as you said, that was what was different this year. In the past years, we were a little late in going into visiting. We were kind of towards the end of session when they were already in budget negotiations. Mm-hmm. And this year, we started out earlier, and I think that's what made it a priority among the legislators.
The other thing I think we should bring out just so people know is, and you touched on it for a second, was when any type of effort like this, as effective as you can be through your statewide advocacy, you really need kind of a champion pulling for you in Springfield, a state representative or state senator. And this year we were, I think, particularly lucky because I think we've had Representative Joe Lyons on the air before talking about this issue and other issues that he's been involved with. And Representative Lyons from the northwest side of the city really kind of was the quarterback of this amongst his colleagues in the General Assembly. And also, I think what we had when, as people read in the paper, there's kind of three major players in the budget negotiations. It's the Speaker, Mike Madigan, the Governor, Blagojevich, and the Senate President, Emil Jones. And I think, at least from the House side, Speaker Madigan, according to what we're hearing, was the kind of the main catalyst for making sure that this got funded in the budget this year.
Definitely. And with Representative Lyons' support, and with the visits that the board members and other groups did, I think there were over 80 House sponsors on that bill. And with those sponsors going to Speaker Madigan and advocating for this, I think that also helped.
Exactly. That was probably the main thing that we really focused on in terms of the social services.
Well, I also think it shows one thing to those people who say that, I don't want to get involved in the political system because I did once and it didn't work. Well, if you keep working at it, sure, first time in 6 years, but it worked. And I think people need to understand that, because there's one thing a lot of these professional advocacy groups know, that you keep plugging away and you keep plugging away and you keep plugging away, and you don't assume that anybody's heard your argument before, and you keep going at it, and some days you win.
Exactly. I think we saw that with some of the other social service groups that were also seeking money at the end of the session. I was astounded to hear that some of the reps saying to me, well, we never heard that before. I know for a fact they had been saying it loud and strong all year, but it didn't get registered to the degree that it needed to in order to get funded. So you're absolutely right, Jim. You got to keep at it over and over and over again. We're taking phone calls that are comments and concerns that you have at area code 312-751-1979. Mary Lou, we talked a little bit about the social services increases, but maybe we should back up a little bit. I know it was kind of a hectic year for funding in a lot of areas. There was a lot of rush at the end. You want to talk a little bit about some of the other sort of the big picture issues, what the governor's proposed and what the legislature funded in terms of the All Kids Plan and the preschool thing that was in the press a little bit?
I know with the All Kids program, I believe about $45 million was included in the budget to implement the first year. And as some of the listeners might not know, the All Kids program is to provide health care coverage to all children in Illinois. So it will expand health care coverage to all children. So in that aspect, there was initial funding provided for the first year. Mm-hmm. For all kids. And for the preschool program, it's the Preschool for All program. And for that program, also $45 million was included for the first year. And that program, in the first year, it'll give priority to programs who serve at-risk children and to programs serving children of low-income families to help them take advantage of preschool programs. Eventually, the thought is that over the next 3 or 4 years, additional funding will be provided so that all 3 and 4 year olds in the state can participate in preschool.
And I know that some of the advocacy groups that were instrumental in passing that have talked to representatives of the Archdiocese and some of the other dioceses as well about the possibility of Catholic schools participating in that preschool program as well.
Right. I believe that the funding will be available to both public and private preschool programs as well as faith-based programs.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Lou, the one thing I wondered about regarding that and Catholic Charities is a lot of people listening are probably saying, no, wait a minute, what if state funds going to Catholic organizations? But especially would a outfit like Catholic Charities, which is, I believe, the number one private social service organization in the United States, the overwhelming majority of the people that we serve are non-Catholic.
Right, exactly. I think it's about 80% or maybe even more that Catholic Charity serves are non-Catholic.
Mm-hmm. And these funds are not used to proselytize. They're used to help people with their day-to-day lives.
Right, mm-hmm. Not at all. That's true. Catholic Charities, their programs are help all people of low-income families and all people around the state.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after a brief message or two here. We're talking with Ms. Mary Lou Garvaccio of the Catholic Conference staff, and we're going over some of the issues that pertain to healthcare and social services that we were dealing with in the legislative session. The number, 312-751-1979, and we'll be back after this message.
It's not too early to register your pre-K children for next fall in one of the excellent Catholic elementary schools in Chicago and the suburbs. Registration is open for 3 and 4-year-old pre-K children, as well as kindergarten through 8th grade student transfers. Perhaps you heard the impressive numbers, test scores above national standards, a 19-to-1 student-teacher ratio, and a 97% attendance rate. Catholic school students go on to successful high school and college experiences and become the leaders of tomorrow. Go to the Catholic school of your choice for more information or go online and visit the school's webpage at www.archchicago.org. That's www.archchicago.org. Catholic schools, where faith and education meet.
Each year in Chicago, 3,000 children are reported sexually abused. The Chicago Children's Advocacy Center restores the trust that was once lost. It's a place where professionals come together under one roof and abused children tell their stories. A place where they can get help immediately. Support the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. For more information or to help, call 1-877-703-HOPE or visit chicagocac.org.
Most interment arrangements at the 42 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Great. We're back. This is Bob Gilligan with Jim Dwyer. We're talking about some of the public policy issues facing the Catholic Conference this past legislative session that concluded on, I think it was May 7th or something like that, which we were talking at the break is a little bit earlier than we usually adjourn, which is usually more towards like May and June. But we won't question.
Well,
gift horse in the mouth.
I'm getting up in years, and I remember when the state legislature never adjourned before June 30th.
We're not complaining that it adjourned early. It was supposed to adjourn on April 7th. I was complaining on April 8th, but we made it that far. We were talking with Mary Lou Garvaccio, one of the associate directors at the Catholic Conference, about some of the social service healthcare related issues. And Mary Lou, Jim and I were talking at the break. One of the things that we heard so much in October, November, December, when it looked like it was going to be a bitter cold winter, and thankfully it wasn't, although it doesn't seem to be going away, though, does it? It was some of the discussions about our obligation to fund, to assist people heat their homes through LIHEAP, which is what, the Low Income Heating and Energy Program? Do I have LIHEAP right? You want to talk a little bit about some of those issues?
Sure. The LIHEAP program, it's a federal program, I believe, that provides funding for low-income families or individuals to help with their energy bills, utility bills. And this year in the legislative session, there was an effort to provide additional funding for the state supplemental funds that supplements that, the federal funding for that. And there was a bill that added about $5 million to that fund, so there will be more resources for low-income families to access in order to help them with their utility bills.
And I think the feds did something as well. I think in the budget that passed Congress, they also put some additional funding into Hawaii Heap, didn't they?
Yes, I believe they did. I'm not sure the figure, but I believe there was more funding.
That's a big issue because we participated in some press conferences with Pat Quinn, the lieutenant governor, and Father Pat Lee from Immaculate Conception. And we've been in a couple different coalitions trying to advocate for not only awareness, but to do something more towards assist people with energy assistance, because that is becoming an increasingly difficult problem to deal with. Jim, what was the other issue we were talking about? Some of the issues that pertain to, I'm drawing a blank on, I know, Mary Lou, we were talking at the break, Jim and I, with, it's Monday morning, the issue we had with the abandoned babies.
Oh, yes.
That made the press, I know, a little bit. Do you want to talk a little bit about that for a second?
From what I know about the issue, there was an issue, a piece of legislation that was introduced that would add to the Abandoned Newborn Infant Act that a parent could leave a baby at a church. Right now, I believe it's only hospitals and police stations and fire stations where an infant can be left. And then the legislation would have added churches, but there were a lot of issues about whether that would be appropriate because churches, most of them, probably all of them, don't have staff, someone there 24 hours a day to accept an infant and to get them to the proper treatment. So that was an issue. And that bill did not pass this year.
Right. I know the press picked up on that a while after the Mary and Joseph infant incident the holidays.
Yeah, there was that one where the infant was left at a church and the infant ended up doing well, but there was that concern that there may not. And I think a lot of people believe that even if it's not codified in law, that a church is one of the places that you could probably leave a child.
Well, exactly. But it's kind of one of those issues where maybe you don't want to put that into state statute because of liability issues.
Right.
And as Mary Lou had mentioned, there's also the issue with somebody being there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the other issue, too, is, and this gets really complicated, is why just a church? What's a church? What is a house of worship? Is a mosque a church? How about a synagogue? So then you don't want to get into a situation of putting that into law. So that got a little bit complicated. And so in essence, I think what we were able to do is there were so many issues with the legislation that it just wasn't prudent to pass it. And it's perhaps best if it's just in such a situation where in order to avoid criminal neglect that it just isn't a firehouse, police station, or hospital.
Right. Another issue with that bill was that one of the provisions was that only certain churches may be kind of accredited or something like that by DCFS as the proper place to leave a child. So the issue was how would someone in a crisis know whether one church or another was the right place to leave a child.
Right. Finally, perhaps one of the other social service hospital healthcare related issues that we talked about in previous programs with Phil Karst, who's the director of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, was the legislation that would have mandated that not-for-profit hospitals deliver a certain percentage of their care towards a very narrow definition of what charity care is. And that was bill being brought by primarily the Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and it was discussed, and I know the press covered it for a period of time there. And that bill also wound up not passing, but there's going to be an obligation to work on that, I think, over the interim, and we're going to see some further movement on that legislation as well.
Right, yes. There are discussions continuing between the Attorney General's office and the hospitals to try and work something out.
Well, I think when you look at the Catholic hospitals, not only in the city of Chicago, but throughout the state, they're often the last safety net in any community. A lot of hospitals close and a lot of them become parts of bigger systems and they cut back in what they can offer in certain areas. The Catholic hospitals are still there offering comprehensive services and they're probably the last remaining part of the safety net in many communities and, if anything, should be applauded for what they're doing and not penalized in any way.
Right. On the state level, Mary Lou, I know one of the issues that we talked about in Springfield was the trying to get Medicaid eligibility for victims of torture who are coming in from refugees and asylees from out of state. And I believe that legislation also passed.
Right, yes. That was Senate Bill 2328, and that did pass. And that would give Medicaid eligibility to persons who meet certain income and asset guidelines, who meet certain requirements, if they've been victims of torture and they meet certain requirements under this legislation. So it would help a lot more people in our state that need that help.
I think what we're trying to do here this morning, and Jim, we were talking earlier, is just to kind of give a snapshot. There's pages and pages of legislation that we have to act on and work on and at least review and monitor. Some we support, some we get involved with different levels of activity. But just to kind of give some listeners a sense of the wide range of issues, and this is just in the area of social services that we deal with at the conference. And I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about after the break is when we come back is some of the other issues that we were dealing with pertaining to the whole controversy on stem cell research and some of the immigration issues that we were talking about at the federal level and our role in that effort. We're going to take a quick break. It's half past the hour here at 9:30. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Jim Dwyer talking about state public policy issues. The phone number is area code 312-751-1979. We'll be back in a brief minute.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
Hi, I'm Sean Harriott. Join me 6 days a week as we help bridge the gap between faith and everyday life, talking about the intersection of faith and everyday life, and help you live your life in the world as a Catholic.
Plus, get all the latest Chicagoland news, traffic, and weather. Start your day with Morning Air on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. It's a Morning Air.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
With Jim Dwyer, my co-host, and we're talking about the public policy issues that the conference dealt with over the past couple months or so. And we've been talking a lot about sort of the social services, healthcare related issues and making a transition, I guess. This is probably still in the healthcare world, I guess, Jim, right? You know, one
Very
of the,
much so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think of it as a hospital issue. I guess that's my problem. Is we're talking about the controversy over stem cell funding and what's the state's obligation in doing that. And I think we were pretty successful this past year, and we have been very successful, actually, in the General Assembly. We're talking about some of the reasons maybe for that during the break with conveying our perception, our opinion about what we should be doing in this area. But anyway, in a nutshell, there was a request from the governor's office this year to fund his what they're calling the Illinois Regenerative Medical Institute with a $15 million appropriation for the FY07 budget year that begins July 1st of this year. And some people may have read that he did announce very recently who will receive funding when he announced that $10 million was funded during the last budget year. And recently it was announced which research projects did receive funding and which did not. So the $10 million has been funded and it's been out there from the FY06 budget year. But in this recently concluded legislative session, They were not successful in obtaining funding for the $15 million that was sought, which I think is in part a victory for us. And it also shows, I think, the reluctance of policymakers, at least at this point in time, to fund something that is many feel have moral objections, not only moral objections, but it's maybe not a path they want to go down right now in terms of public dollars. It's also a very controversial issue when it comes to the politics of it in terms of how the perception of funding or supporting such a project is. And it was sort of interesting to me, though, this year it was more – the advocacy was coming more from the governor's office and from the comptroller's office as opposed to in past years when we saw a lot of the advocacy coming from actually other lawmakers in Springfield.
And I think this is one thing that we need to clarify once again. We're talking about embryonic stem cell research, not stem cell research in general, because the Catholic Church is not – opposed to adult stem cell research. So we need to clarify that right off the bat for those who don't usually listen to us and don't understand the nuances of this issue. But I think the one thing we were talking about during the break that seems to be ironic, considering a year ago when the comptroller Hines wanted a big $100 million issue on the ballot, an advisory referendum that would have the state funding it over an extensive period of time with additional taxes on cosmetic surgeries and things of that. And here it is a year later.
I think it was a billion. Right?
And even with the executive fiat last year and even with tremendous support from the media in this state, and the media in this state has been all for embryonic stem cell research, this really kind of fell flat. And Mary Lou, Bob, can you explain why? I'm kind of interested in that. This really fell flat.
Well, I think it did in large part because I think you see many lawmakers, it is very controversial. The support behind this is very controversial. And I think lawmakers in general are risk adverse. And in budget and on issues like this, I think they tend to shy away from supporting something that is so controversial. Mary Lou, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that as well?
I think, not to get too political here, but I think the way that the funding was included in last year's budget was also an issue with a number of legislators in terms of some of the legislators didn't even know what the funding was in there. I think that was an issue as well.
I think you're absolutely right. The way it was handled last year, Jim, I think Mary Lou is absolutely correct, probably. The fact that there was an announcement made, I believe it was in July, which was a full month or so after the legislature had concluded that they had actually supported funding for this, and it was buried deep within some budget appropriations bill, probably set a lot of people off in terms of just their whole wanting to be affiliated with that sort of way of approaching the issue.
Yes, but we have an election year. Is there a possibility that this could happen again this year, given that if the governor finds himself down in the polls, might he pull another, what some people would call a theatrical stunt, to announce more earmarking of more millions to a pet project of his?
Anything's possible, but I can recall conversations at the end of the session when they were debating the budget bills, and it was asked over and over and over again, is there anything in here that would, and the response was always no. It was clarified many times in terms of was there ever support for embryonic stem cell research funding in the budget, and it was stated on many occasions that there was not. So, but that does not preclude them from doing something different. Anybody's guess.
I wonder what happened with Comptroller Hines. Why did he kind of, it appears to me, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but it appears to me that after the initial publicity flurry, and there was significant flurry in the media last year,
right,
and he was all over the place, and he was standing next to the governor when he did his executive fiat last year, one would think that they would have really kicked it into high gear after that. Has he decided to back down? Does anybody have any clue as to why he backed down?
I don't think they've backed down totally, but they have tone down their efforts to support it. And I think it's in large part because of not only our efforts, but many other groups out there as well who have communicated with their legislators that they have concerns about this issue, and they've been very vocal about their stance about it. So I think when you get into the legislative debate, you find a lot of legislators, because they're getting a lot of heat in their districts about the funding that supporting this, have been reluctant to do so.
What would have required, would they have had to put out the same petitions like we did on the preservation of marriage?
Because it was a bonding initiative, because it was a state bonding initiative, you could have, the legislature could refer it. The legislature has the prerogative in Illinois of referring it to the voters for a bond capacity. That's why they needed to vote on it. But also, I think what you bring up is a good point, is they were originally seeking $1 billion. And, you know, the funding that was just announced was $10 million. And of the $10 million, it's hard for us to decipher what was embryonic, what's adult, and what's some combination of the above. But just looking at the names on the pieces of paper, Dr. Patrick Stiff from Loyola received some of that funding, as did others. So how much actually went for embryonic is probably very small of the original amount sought, which was over $1 billion, and we're down to less than $10 million.
Yeah, and actually, considering, I mean, $10 million is a lot of money to most people, but considering the size of the state budget, it's really a spit in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. It's a $55 billion budget now, so $10 million is and even, you know, what is that, less than ten? It's probably the funding for embryonic is, it's probably less than five, and not that that would, you can defend that, but it's not $1 billion.
Okay, well, I think we're ready for another break here, and then when we return, we'll talk a little bit more about legislative efforts and get into a little bit about the immigration rallies of recent weeks.
Absolutely. We'll be back in, what, about a minute?
Yep.
1 minute it is. This is Bob Gilligan and Jim Dwyer. Back in just a couple, well, we're now down to 60 seconds, 59 seconds.
Why do we have four Gospels instead of one? How do Catholics understand the stories of creation in the book of Genesis?
What is the book of Revelation really
what
about?
What do the prophets of ancient Israel have to say to us today?
To think about the answers to these questions and many more, join committed Catholics in the Chicago Catholic Scripture School of the Archdiocese of Chicago. The Chicago Catholic Scripture School offers a structured curriculum for serious study of the entire Bible at locations throughout Chicagoland. You'll be taught by qualified instructors who are passionate about the Bible, and you'll join other adults to study these foundational texts of our Catholic faith. Find out more about the Chicago Catholic Scripture School by calling the Archdiocese of Chicago's Office for Catechesis at 312-243-3700. That's 312-243-3700 for the Chicago Catholic Scripture School. Come and share the Word.
This is Bob Gilligan. I'm back with Jim Dwyer talking about some of the public policy issues facing the Catholic Conference. Jim, we're talking at the break a little bit about making a sort of transition from some of the state activities to the federal level. The whole topic of immigration reform is fresh on people's minds, and we've seen a number of different rallies and protests about support for or against the House bill and the positioning of various groups on this legislation. And tonight, the president will be making an address about the administration's perspective on national security and immigration and paths to citizenship. So it looks like we're and the Senate is about to take up the House legislation as well, as they're going to proceed on, and maybe this bill will go to conference committee, maybe it will not.
And this has been a very difficult issue for a lot of Catholics, and my gauge would be that Catholics may be about as split as everybody else in the country on this as to what is amnesty, as to rewarding people who they say are engaged in illegal behavior by being here in the first place, versus those who feel, well, we don't want to split up families and we should give everybody a path to citizenship no matter how they came here. So it's become a very divisive issue, and the Catholic bishops have been for a comprehensive solution to this, but because a lot of these rallies bring in a lot of disparate groups, we have been somehow identified with groups that maybe we might not want to be identified with. And that's created a little bit of an antagonism with some Catholics, because I know I get the calls here at the Archdiocese, and there have been some very angry people just about our participation in any of these rallies.
Yeah, we've received some of the phone calls as well. I think that is a concern, because we've seen, in those marches, representatives of the Catholic Church, and when you see a representative of the church, a member of the clergy, and then you see somebody walking behind them with a sign that says Amnesty Now, the visual image is to put those two things together, and the church is not for Amnesty Now. There's the McCain-Kennedy bill. One could argue with the merits of it, and it's a good, healthy argument, but that's not our position. I think what we're really focused on is more of the impact that this law has had on separating families. And as you said, the bishops are calling for a comprehensive solution, which does not preclude any discussion about security enhancements and border security. We do believe that our border should be secure, but we also don't believe that families should be torn apart by federal immigration policies. And that is a fact, and that's a problem today.
And the bishops were rightfully worried and concerned about criminalizing those, especially in the churches, who would help people who just need help, regardless of their situation. And if they were to help somebody and didn't find out if they were legal or illegally here, that they somehow would be criminalized. When you're trying to just help people survive, that shouldn't be a point of reference,
right?
And you're helping them.
We were talking earlier about the funding of Catholic Charities, and Catholic Charities is an agency that does go out and help documented, undocumented citizens, non-citizens, etc., because of the belief in our Catholic theology that people are made in the image and likeness of God. So we don't ask them necessarily all these questions in order to assist them, and nor do we feel we should be on the front lines of determining who's here legally and illegally. People come for help, and we give them help, period. And that is a concern with the perception of the House bill as it is written with 4437, the House legislation. It's some believe that it would criminalize that sort of assistance and that sort of activity, and we need to help clarify that in order so it doesn't preclude our actions from being perhaps subject to a criminal action.
But when we make this kind of gesture of compassion, once again it gets confused. I've gotten calls from people saying you're for illegal immigration. Yeah. That's not true. The Catholic Church is not for illegal immigration. And also, we participated in some rallies where other people have brought their own agendas. There were posters of Che Guevara at some of the immigration rallies.
Right, right.
But I can assure anybody who's listening that Cardinal George is not for a communist form of government in any country, let alone the United States of America. So that's one of the risks you take when you get involved in an issue that's so broad and that transcends any political ideology that's out there. You bring a lot of disparate agendas together, and we don't necessarily agree with all those who were involved in that. So I think that needs to be made clear to people. The Catholic Church of Chicago is not for illegal immigration. The Catholic Church of Chicago is not for a communist form of government here or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see that the coverage of it as well, because I think we're dangerously into that area in a public policy debate where maybe the rhetoric is beyond the reality, and we have groups with maybe some hidden agendas in terms of political aspirations and trying to move this issue to attack another side, be it the Democrats or the Republicans, and that's the problem that we have sometimes in these issues. We get caught up in that by trying to state our position, and we get used by one side or the other, and that's not right.
Well, I would recommend to anyone who's listening to go to our website at www.archchicago.org, and you can read the statement of the Bishops of Illinois on this and get a broader context of what they're really for, and understand that the Bishops of Illinois are for secure borders. They are for a comprehensive solution that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this repeatedly whenever we brought this up. Too many people that have agendas and too many people who have a dog in this fight are usually tend to appeal to those who want the knee-jerk reactions. And the knee-jerk reactions may satisfy you emotionally for a short period of time, but they don't deal with the core problems involved in immigration.
Absolutely. And it is one of those issues that does engender that kind of knee-jerk reaction. Absolutely. And it's very easy to spin this issue. And I think you're seeing that go on a lot of levels. And I am kind of fascinated by the numbers of individuals who are showing up for some of these rallies and marches and how they're being organized, because that is not easy to get. What was the number in Chicago a couple of weeks ago?
Oh,
it was
like somewhere around 300,000 to 400,000
people on a Monday. Monday, right? Wasn't it a Monday?
Yes. And when I was in Arizona, they had 150,000 in downtown Phoenix the day after Palm Sunday.
Yeah, that's something. We're going to take a quick break for the final 10 minutes of our program. The phone number is 312-751-1979. We'll come back with some concluding remarks about the past legislative session and about the whole debate on immigration reform.
It's not too early to register your pre-K children for next fall in one of the excellent Catholic elementary schools in Chicago and the suburbs. Registration is open for 3- and 4-year-old pre-K children, as well as kindergarten through 8th grade student transfers. Perhaps you heard the impressive numbers: test scores above national standards, a 19-to-1 student-teacher ratio, and a 97% attendance rate. Catholic school students go on to successful high school and college experiences and become the leaders of tomorrow. Go to the Catholic school of your choice for more information, or go online and visit the school's webpage at www.archchicago.org. That's www.archchicago.org. Catholic schools, where faith and education meet.
This is Bob Gilligan, and I'm back with Jim Dwyer talking about some of the public policy issues that we were dealing with past session. And in the final 10 minutes, I think what we want to try to do is take it from, instead of a past, looking back on the past, but look forward into in the future and find out and discuss a little bit about what's going to happen over the next couple months in terms of when they come back in November, because there is this event going on. What is it, Mark? Is it November 6th election date?
I believe so.
I can't remember. The first Tuesday in November. And the veto session will be coming up after that, and trying to predict what will happen during the veto session is virtually impossible, because so much of it is contingent upon who wins and who loses, not only at the gubernatorial race, at the gubernatorial level, but also among certain state Senate and state representative seats. And I think one of the issues to tie back that we were just looking at was the whole issue of stem cell research. We mentioned that it wasn't funded in the recently concluded session, but depending on what happens, it very well could be funded, depending on who wins and who loses, especially on the Senate side, because I think we're going to see a substantial amount of turnover. There's a couple individuals who are not going to run again in the Senate, and when those seats start turning over, that could have an impact on at least that issue and maybe some others.
Yeah, and if we have a change in a gubernatorial situation, if by some chance Blagojevich were to lose, would he try to use the veto session to do an end round and run around the state legislature that had been not too promising about embryonic stem cell research, and try to maybe engineer a last-minute funding just before he leaves?
He very well could, and so could his – well, depending on, you know, who were to defeat him, if it were the Republican nominee, you know, I don't think she would be opposed to embryonic stem cell funding. So we could kind of have a stalemate on that issue, although I don't think she would be as forceful as he has been on that particular topic. But I think if there's a new administration that's coming in, this administration would probably just start to begin that process of sort of, you know, putting away the boxes and helping the transition for the new group coming in. That's my recollection of what happened when Ryan left and the governor came in.
Yeah, and I wonder, in either way, you're going to have some lame ducks in the legislatures.
Absolutely.
And they're going to be wondering, well, wait, maybe I can make one final imprint on the land political landscape of the state before I take off. And I think that's usually the wild card
in these situations,
isn't it?
It's very right. It's wide open because there's no expedient, there's no immediate oversight in terms of, you know, an election coming up. We've seen some odd things happen in those sort of situations. I think that's one of the years that we were mentioning that the Bears got the funding for Soldier Field to do it during the veto session. So veto sessions can be kind of odd that way. And of course, you know, the main purpose of it is to act on or amend the governor's his vetoes. So that will be going on as well. So sometimes those sessions are exciting, fast and furious, and other times they're just sort of dullsville and you kind of go home early.
And since an election has just ended, whether you're a lame duck or whether you're coming back, you're not going to face any immediate political ramifications of any decision you make when
Absolutely.
You're in a veto session.
Right.
So that's what makes the veto session after an election rather unique.
Yep.
By the way, I see we got a call from Sally from Chicago. You have a question about the immigration stance?
Yes, I do. Several things have come to mind in watching this whole area develop. And I have to honestly say that I'm concerned on two fronts, the political front and also the church's involvement. Number one, is Luis Gutierrez.
Yeah.
Yes,
we know who you're talking about.
Is he a senator?
He is a congressman from like the Bucktown area.
Okay. My understanding is, according to, I think, Illinois Constitution, is that he is supposed to show neither pro or con to a situation and become a partisan in any of those things. And I just think that that's where I think things get off the hook here. I think the church as well, if they don't want to be confused, and I think it could be confused on both sides, both the people marching who are on one side or the other, the people who are marching for just open-ended immigration, to see the church in that light and understand it from their perspective. A picture speaks louder than a thousand words. So the words that you're trying to do to clarify your situation, I think many times are lost. I think the church needs to stand back, be charitable, but stand back. I don't think they need to be as visual as they could have been in the civil rights movement.
So you think the actual participation in some of these rallies was misplaced?
I do. I think it's inordinate. I really think it's inordinate. And I think that from the Conference of Bishops, some of those same bishops who had responsibility of cleaning up the pedophilic problem that we had were very mute on the subject. So, you know, it's kind of clean up your own house, take care of the people that are within the church. Not that we're not supposed to take care of the people outside the church, but it goes down to the same thing as what a mother does for her family, that some things are better left uninvolved in, except showing support, love, and care, and really to maybe put the emphasis where the political figures are concerned, give your calls, say we're in support of something humane, coming out with the Pope's statement, coming out with the Bishop's statement, but not all of this overt attention that symbolizes something else, I think, to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to say, because I don't think it's responsible. I really don't. When we talk about this era of responsibility, we have to kind of look hard and think about what's our next step going to be. And there was a very wonderful article in our Sunday Visitor from a very balanced view about the issue of immigration. My concern is that Mr. Gutierrez should really do what he's intended to do. I think there's a statute that he could be impeached for doing what he's doing. And mark me if I'm wrong. I'd like a little information on that.
I think I was tracking what you were saying with regard to the church involving social and political issues, and that's yeah, we could discuss that. But Congressman Gutierrez has every right to speak out on this matter or any other matter. He's an elected official. He's an elected congressman, and. He has every response. They all do that. That's how they communicate. And so I'm not sure if I'm following your logic on the congressman.
Well, Sally, I believe Sally has left us. So, Sally, thanks for your call. It's an interesting perspective. I've gotten a lot of calls that saying that we can talk about immigration, but we shouldn't be so visual in the marches. Other people have thanked us for being visual. So there's, like I said, when we originally talked about immigration, when we brought up the subject, there is a tremendous divide even among Catholics as to what is the proper way to approach this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate we seem to have lost Sally, because we could have continued that conversation about the church's involvement with social issues and political issues, because she brings up an interesting point. And we've been hearing a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And when you're outspoken and you're taking a stance on issues, it's going to educate some people. It's going to create people. People are going to their attention will be focused. And it creates a dialogue, which is really, I think, what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're also being told as much as a dialogue we want to create is we have to get out of here. This is Bob Gilligan with Jim Dwyer.
Thank you, Bob.
Wrapping up the legislative session for the Catholic Conference's agenda, and hopefully we'll talk to Sally some other time and we can continue that line of thought. We will sign up for now, and we'll be back on the
third Monday
in the month of June. Thanks.
See you then.
Goodbye.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 820 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.